Hello, everyone, and welcome to Mostly Spoilers. I am Mike.
I'm Tom Brody.
You are not Tom Brody, first off. You are my second least favorite person. My third is going to be a man named Tom Brody, which is, as you are familiar, not a real name.
You're telling me there's nobody named Tom Brody?
I'm sure there's someone named Tom Brody.
But his name isn't real.
I'm just saying that... I'm not sure what I'm saying. Welcome to Mostly Spoilers. I am Mike. This is Laird.
How you doing?
Laird, how big are your feet?
Well, let me tell you, Tom Brody was miscellaneous crew on a film in the 1980s, in 1980 actually, called Sex Boat, where he was production assistant. So don't you dare say his name is unreal.
Tom Brody, you're telling me, is the production assistant of a 1980 film.
Well, once. It was 1980.
Well, he still is the production assistant of a film.
You don't know if he's still alive.
I mean, do we just say, like, he doesn't exist if he's not alive anymore?
Well, apparently his name isn't real, so what
else?
Well,
his name's real, but I'm just saying...
You said it wasn't. I heard you loud and clear.
Look, here's the thing. Laird, did you try to say Tom Brady... And you failed?
No, I actually was trying to trick you into thinking that Tom Brody, well, that I had said Tom Brady, and then you were going to go on this whole tirade, and I was going to be like, ah, but I said Tom Brody.
Oh, that was your actual plan?
Yes, it did not work out for me. However,
no.
I like this one better because...
Well, I immediately heard you say Tom Brody.
It was great. Apparently, Tom Brody, after he finished with this whole sex boat thing, ended up publishing Nutritional Biochemistry 2nd Edition.
Are you... You think that the same Tom Brody... who was a production assistant on the 1980 classic
I defy you to prove
Sex
otherwise.
Boat. I'm going to make it my life's mission to prove otherwise.
We're 18 years difference. I mean, it's entirely possible that I went and got his...
He was like, well, I've done the young thing.
How do you earn
got
money
my sex
to
boat
university?
Money. Now I'm going to... I can't believe you. Laird, how big are your feet?
This big. I'd like to point out for the record, because Mike finds this important to do, that this time I did not gesticulate or make any kind of motions whatsoever.
He
I,
didn't
fact,
at all.
I said, this big.
This big. While some of you who have listened to this before would know that typically Laird likes to make a lot of visual gestures on a totally audio podcast.
That's true.
This time he did not. He actually just said,
there is
this
a chance
big.
Your wife has actually read a book by Tom Brody. As part of her schooling.
It's possible.
There is a non-zero chance.
I mean, there's a non-zero chance that my wife has seen the film Sex Boat, which was...
That should really alarm you.
Which he was... I don't know which one of those would alarm me more. Laird, would you say, if you were to talk about your feet, would you say they are big, medium, or small?
I wouldn't. I would say they're feet. Like I don't go around going, what categorization do I put my feet into?
Say that someone put a gun to your head. Let's say that Tom Brody put a gun to your head and
I
said...
I feel like his career was too successful
to
worry about that kind of
behavior. Here are three categories you can fit into. Big foot.
He's a nutritional biochemist.
Foot,
I'm pretty sure he knows.
Or small foot. Which one of those would you do?
Well, I suppose I would say medium.
So you are medium foot.
No, but I would say that to stop myself from being shot by Tom Brody, one-time PhD, turned assassin for the people who desperately want to find out people's relative foot size compared to the average population.
So I would say that I
Man, his career
am
took a dark
a
turn.
Bit of a big foot. They're not huge. I'm about an 11.
This is all winding up to him doing the thing about Sasquatches, by the way.
That's
what it is.
100%. 100%.
This is how he decided to introduce this topic.
Saw
this was
a film.
This was his premise.
Called Smallfoot.
Sure.
And I wanted to come up with an interesting way. And we're
4 minutes.
Four minutes into the episode.
Absolutely.
And we have discussed the
look what you
potential
have
career path of Tom Brody, as well as we finally brought up the name. So you asked me. I told you that on Thursday I went to my son's school.
You did.
And we watched a film called Smallfoot.
Mm-hmm.
And you asked me how it was. And I did not answer you because I wanted to answer you on the podcast.
There we go. He's dead. Died in Greenwich, Connecticut. 86
which,
years old.
Which one?
Yes.
All right.
Thomas C. Brady, if you must know.
Anyways, so Smallfoot was a really good movie.
Was it?
Yeah, the kids really liked it.
Question.
I've seen it twice now. Go ahead.
What's a shoot?
What's a what?
A shoot.
I'm not talking about that.
Okay. Other question.
Yeah.
Unrelated to shoots. Is it a generational comedy?
Is it a generational comedy?
Yes. I've heard you describe things as generational comedies before, and I really want to know if this is one of them.
So by generational comedy, you mean, like, do I think it will span generations?
Well, I don't know. It was your definition that you used for Thor Ragnarok. So I guess I should say, is it Thor Ragnarok?
Did I say Thor Ragnarok was a generational comedy?
On this very podcast.
I don't believe that I said that.
I spent several minutes roundly mocking you for it on this very podcast.
All right. I probably would have said that.
Good. I'm glad you conceded that, or else the next thing you would have heard would have been part of this podcast.
Played on this podcast.
In which part of that podcast plays. It would have been marvelous.
No, that's 100% fair. Is it a generational comedy? I don't think that that most animated films could be considered a generational film. Because I just don't think that they have that impact in a lot of ways.
Fair enough.
I think there are a very, very small list of generational cartoons. If I were listing generational cartoons,
mm-hmm.
the only two I would really say...
Two?
Yeah.
Wow.
Would Gosh. Probably be The Lion King
mm-hmm.
and Toy Story.
So not Beauty and the Beast?
No.
Nominated for Best Picture?
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Yeah. Well, you've never seen Beauty and the Beast.
I have.
The cartoon version?
Yes.
All the way through?
Yes.
Since when?
I've seen it with my kids.
Yes, but the last time we discussed this, you said that you've basically seen bits and pieces of it with your kids, and you have not
I haven't sat down and watched it start to finish.
No, exactly. You've basically seen it in clip show form under the most annoying circumstances possible.
You're suggesting my kids are the most annoying circumstance possible?
You're suggesting they're not.
I'm not suggesting they're not. to be fair, I haven't actually sat down. I've probably seen it. I would probably say I could split it into two pieces. Like, I've seen the full first half and the full second half. And I really enjoyed it. I actually thought it was quite good. I think we... Have we discussed my big issue with Beauty and the Beast on the air before?
No.
Okay. I have a big issue with Beauty and the Beast.
I believe you.
So, do we ever find out what his name is? His actual name?
Not in the movie. His actual name is Adam.
Adam. Okay. So, Adam is for...
I feel like I know where this is going, and if I'm right, I'm going to be so amused. Go ahead.
So, Adam is a jerk.
He is, yeah.
Right? That's this fundamental story.
That's true.
And a woman comes, mm-hmm. a haggardly woman comes, mm-hmm. And asks him for help. And he basically says no, because he doesn't care about anyone except himself.
Mm-hmm.
And she shows him that she could also be beautiful. Kind of. She does in the book thing that I've read, which she suddenly is like, look, I actually look like this, but I was looking haggard because I wanted to see if you would care for me, even though I was yada, yada, yada. Anyways, but she is a sorceress of sorts.
Yes.
And she curses him.
That's true.
And that if he does not find true love and is loved in return, I believe,
mm-hmm.
By his 21st birthday...
Mm-hmm.
Then he will forever remain a beast.
Yes.
Okay. So, first off, how old is Adam when this happens? This is not my major issue.
No, I know, but just saying you've seen the problem. Now,
how old is Adam in this
they
issue?
They did, at one point, release an interquel.
Okay.
Sort of, if you will. And it included a flashback to, it was like the Christmas version.
Okay.
And it included a flashback to the Christmas where he became the Beast.
Okay.
And yeah, because of that being established, he was like 13. He was like 12 or 13. So
right.
A little bit disproportionate in the retribution angle there.
So yeah. So you're like, okay, you're a teenager, barely, and kind of a jerk, so I'm potentially going to forever curse you and turn you into a beast. Which really... shifts the antagonist role in my role view a little bit from Gaston, a little bit more into the sorcerers. But there's a second part that I have a much, much bigger issue with, which is there's all these servants.
Yes, indeed.
And the servants mm-hmm. Seem, when they are in their,
object forms.
Object forms, which is called the thing where objects have humanity, which is called...
I could help you, but I'm really...
As an English major, I wish you would. It is called personification. Is that what it is?
It's not the word I'm looking for. It is a word. I think you're looking for anthropomorphized.
Anthropomorphized. Yep. That's the one. So when they... In their anthropomorphized...
I didn't give it to him to help him. I gave it to him because I knew it would cause further
complications. In their anthropomorphized version, they are... They seem like pretty great people. They seem pretty nice.
Yes.
So presumably they were nice in their human forms.
Mm-hmm.
However, if the teenage jerk doesn't find true love and is loved in return, the sorceress has also cursed all of these perfectly nice people to remain coffee tables and teacups and clocks and candle holders for all eternity.
So
how is that fair?
I'm starting to get the feeling we did record this. I feel like we've done this.
I feel like we actually did talk about
this. I feel
like
we did do, but I mean, because
so
I was going
to... So let's not do a super long version of it.
But I was going to bring up that, you know, in the musical actually talks about them, like, sort of devolving toward the forms of their functions during the castle.
Okay.
Because, so they turn more and more object day by day.
Okay.
And you know, eventually the whole point will come where they just are the objects. They're not sentient
anymore.
Okay. And that this is sort of basically their penalty for looking the other way during his upbringing, for not trying to do more. And even, like, after his upbringing, after the curse was laid, like, instead of saying, you got to smarten up, just being like, well, you know, he's a jerk, and let's just keep out of his way and do our jobs and
right.
let that happen.
Now, I think, I actually know now that we have talked about this.
Right?
Because my conclusion to that was that in this time... Who in their right mind would go up against their masters?
Well, I mean, he's a big old lion beast thingy. I'm pretty sure at that point you can say to him whatever you want to. He's not going to be like, so you're hella fired.
Right. But, like, I just think up to that point even, they're technically probably working for his parents.
Absolutely.
And so you're not going to tell the parents, who are also probably rich jerks, that their kid's a rich jerk because you're going to lose your job. Like... That's just how that's going to happen.
Although, so, again, we're not really arguing about the morality of the Enchantress, per se. I'm pretty sure that she's a dick, one way or the other. She took a guy who was, let's say, 12, 13 years old and was like, yeah, this is on you now. That already is...
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
There is a current retelling of this story. Not the... live-action Beauty and the Beast with
Emma
Watson.
There is no live-action Beauty and the Beast. What are you talking about?
But there's a movie called Beastly. It stars, I believe, Vanessa Hudson.
Whom?
Vanessa Hudgens. Vanessa Hudgens.
I choose to believe you.
She's a singer. It also stars Neil Patrick Harris.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know the guy's name who is the lead... But I feel like he might also be the lead in I Am Number 4, maybe?
Ah, that film. It was number two.
What's that?
It was number two.
I like it in theory because I just like those kind of stories, but it was quite terrible. I do also love Timothy Olyphant, so I'm happy for anything he's in. But anyways, the telling of Beastly, the kid is a teenager still, but he's a jerk. He's a really awful dude. And he is mean to one of the Olsen twins who goes to his school.
Is he?
He is, yeah. He's actually,
when was this released?
He's quite mean to her. I want to say probably 2013-ish. Like it's.
I feel like there wouldn't be any Olsen twins in that one.
Welsh. There definitely is.
Welsh?
Welsh. It's a Welsh film. It's directed by Tom Brody.
I think you know he was only involved in one.
So anyways, you can keep looking this up. So...
Dear me, you're right.
What year was it?
2011.
So anyways, in this movie, there are people who are his assistants. Like, there are people who are helping him. but they are not actually cursed. Mm-hmm. They are people who already have problems. Neil Patrick Harris is blind, and the woman is trying to, she's an immigrant, and she's trying to get her son to come, to be able to come to the country. So they already have some obstacles that they're trying to overcome. They spend the movie being great supports to the boy, and when he overcomes all this, they get something instead of just being unpunished. Uh-huh. Neil Patrick Harris is suddenly gifted the gift of sight, and the woman, I believe, gets enough money or whatever to bring her son, or her son comes from overseas. Uh-huh. So in that story, the only one who is impacted negatively is him. Uh-huh. And they make the sorceress into, no, I am teaching a bad person who is going to be a worse person a lesson. They also bring in the boy's dad, so they explain some of the reasons why he might be a jerk, because they kind of lay into the relationship with his father and how his father's not a great dad and yada, yada, yada. And it's just like, no. Is it as good as Beauty and the Beast? No. Is it a better telling of the story? Is it a fairer telling of the story? Yes. And that's why I like it.
I don't think fair is relevant.
Anyways, back to Smallfoot. Smallfoot is not a generational comedy. I will say, every kid and every adult laughed hysterically through this film.
Problem.
Go ahead.
I'm an adult. I did not laugh hysterically through that film.
This is true. You also did not see the film.
When has that ever stopped me?
So, well, here's a question. Do you ever laugh hysterically when you're reading about a film you have not seen?
Yes.
Really?
I'm a strange person.
So when you're, like, so for those who aren't aware, mostly spoilers should be mostly spoilers to Laird, because he has never seen any of the things we talk about. He just has read about them on the interwebs where he lives. He's currently wearing a toonie as an eye patch.
Nonsense. It's a monocle.
Sorry.
It's a bad monocle. Monocle. But it's a monocle.
Underneath his glasses. This is how you get holes in your eye, Laird.
I dispute that hardly. So,
I want to be clear. So, what's the last thing that you read, like, the internet description of that you were laughing over the description without actually seeing the content?
That's a good question. I'd have to think about it.
Okay, you think about it. No. Smallfoot has, I really like the cast. Danny DeVito, Common, Channing Tatum, Zendaya. A couple other people that I, like, recognize their voices, but I can't quite think of who they are. Mm-hmm. LeBron James is also in it. James Corden is in it. He does a new version of Under Pressure called Percy's Pressures. Common does a rap song in it that's quite good. But it's very funny, and it's not funny in the... So, Toy Story is funny to both adults and kids, because there are adult jokes that are funny to adults and kids jokes that are funny to kids, right?
Yes.
Like, you would kind of agree with that?
Yep.
Generally, you're not laughing at the same things the kids are laughing at.
I mean,
in Toy Story.
I to think an extent. The adults can laugh at both.
You can, but, like, you're not going to find as funny the as things funny, in sure. it that the kids are finding funny.
Absolutely.
Smallfoot is one of the first movies where that's not the case. It's just funny. Like, the things are just funny to everyone. It has a lot of physical humor. So it has a lot of sort of slapstick style physical humor. Mm-hmm. But there's not a ton of adult jokes. Like, yeah, there's a couple. But it's like when he suddenly gets caught in an airplane and is, like, basically flying in an airplane, adults are laughing because they've done a good job of making it a funny physical humor piece. And kids are laughing because they've done a good job of making it a funny physical humor piece.
See, I was thinking of, like, The Emperor's New Groove.
Yep.
The humor in The Emperor's New Groove is just, it's agelessly silly.
Yes.
A lot of it is the fact that, I mean, slapstick is very accessible.
But very much so.
That aside, there is a certain... dry quality of the humor that I think just comes off well to everybody. You know, that whole, you know, why does she even have that lever?
Right.
Like, just the cutaways.
But kids find that funny, too. Like, yes. That's not,
that's
like,
what I'm saying. It's not like, it has the same quality.
Like, to me, one of the funniest scenes in that is when she's like, who's in my chair? And he's like, or like, yeah, when he says, who's in my chair? And Kronk's like, oh, Yzma's in your chair. I know. Like, kids think that's hilarious, and adults think that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, Patrick Warburton is unreal in that movie.
Absolutely. He's fantastic. The entire cast is incredible.
I mean, all the cast is good, but him in particular, I just find, like, I like David Spade, I like John Goodman in it, like, they're fantastic. But, like, Patrick Warburton steals that movie.
Oh, absolutely.
What I expected after that, and I don't think was made, was a Kronk, like, his own side movie. Which,
well,
I don't think they did, but I was... Did they?
Yes.
Was it any good?
No.
Was it Patrick Warburton?
Yes.
And it wasn't good.
That's right.
What's it called?
Kronk's New Groove.
And it's a real thing.
Yes.
I barely believe you, because I feel like I would have seen this. And it's not good.
It's not good. Don't you know,
I don't understand.
Disney cannot make sequels.
I mean,
they can make them. They can't make them good.
I was about to say, what about Toy Story 2? And then I remembered, yeah, that's not Disney. Okay, Kronk's New Groove. It's a real thing. I'm obviously going to see it.
I would encourage you not to. The animation is bad.
That's one thing I really hate is when... Like, because the animation in the first one is actually, I really enjoy it. It's quite good. You get these sort of elongated body pieces that sort of, like, everything's like a stretch almost, and it has this real nice piece to it. That was one thing I hated about, there's the movie Home, which was very, very good. And then they made a Netflix series that's very,
so
very
bad.
Yes. So bad. And among other things... does not use the same animation style, which drives me nuts, because I'm just like, well, that's not the same thing. Like, you have to stick with that.
The film received negative reviews and currently holds a 0% approval rating by critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
A zero?
Zero.
How often does that happen?
Not often.
Because I don't follow Rotten Tomatoes because I like bad movies. And so for me, that doesn't... You know, so
arguably, you actively pursue Rotten Tomatoes. You are like hams on Rotten Tomatoes.
I think that now
you like walk up to a movie, you're like, "Hey, I see you got some Rotten Tomatoes smeared on you."
Which
Let's
one
do this thing.
Is Rotten Tomatoes the one that is more audience driven? And there's one that's more audience driven and one that's more critically driven, right?
I choose to believe you. I mean, obviously, in both platforms that we're talking about. Both groups can have their say.
For sure.
Rotten Tomatoes is the one that represents the critic score as like the first index, and that's the number it's referring to, and then there's like the side popcorn score for audiences.
Okay. So that's what we talked about before, that there's like, this is the audience score, this is the critic score. I tend to like films that score probably pretty low with critics. I tend to still enjoy them because I can enjoy a movie that is fundamentally flawed. Like, here's a prime example. I am currently halfway through Creed 2. Now.
How bad could that be?
Well, here's the thing. I really enjoyed Creed. I really thought it was an interesting story to tell. Because it wasn't exactly the story I was expecting.
Fair.
It was a little bit different. It also happens to have just a cast of people I love. Tessa Thompson, Michael B. Jordan, Sylvester Stallone... particularly as Rocky. I think he's still great in that role. I actually think that they've gotten... once you exclude 5 and you start from there, mm-hmm. I think Rocky's performance has gotten better. Rocky Balboa is the best movie of that whole
thing. That's a good film.
It's very good. Creed has that same sort of feel. Here's what Creed 2 is. Hey guys, let's make a shot-for-shot remake of Rocky 4, but we'll put Michael B. Jordan in it. And whenever we're like, hey, that's not quite Rocky 4, we'll go, that's okay. That's a scene from Rocky 3. Yes.
There's no robot in Creed 2.
There's no what?
Robot.
Not yet.
What do you mean not yet? It's
well,
out.
I'm
it is a released film.
I'm only halfway through. How do you know there's no robot?
Because nobody's that much of a criminal.
Yeah. So the plot of Creed 2 is as follows. You probably already know the plot. Yes. But Michael B. Jordan, Adonis Creed, becomes the heavyweight champion of the world. And out of nowhere
comes... That actually happened in the first movie. It's not part of the second movie.
It did not happen in the first movie.
No, don't believe you.
He did not become heavyweight champion of the world in the first movie.
No, he's full of lies.
No, he fought like a fight in the first one.
It was. He was great. And that's how he became heavyweight champion of the world.
I swear to God.
Hey, which one of us saw the movie, you or me?
Me! So, in this movie, after he becomes heavyweight champion, Ivan Drago and his son...
I'm sorry, can you say that name again?
Ivan Drago.
Thank you.
Ivan Drago and his son, Lil Drago, come out of the woodwork from the Ukraine, where they have been living this not-so-nice life.
Picturing this French woman, Ivan Drago.
And they challenge Adonis Creed to a fight. Rocky says, don't take the fight, just like he told Creed in Rocky IV. He doesn't actually go to the fight or train him for the fight. And Adonis gets absolutely destroyed in the first fight. Concussion, ruptured kidney, broken ribs, etc. And that's where I'm at right now. He's been defeated. He's now mad at Rocky because Rocky didn't believe in him. And then I know what's going to happen. Rocky's going to train him. He's going to beat Drago's son. That's the third act. It is so amazingly predictable. The things I actually do really like about it is that... in the first movie, there's this really... In Rocky IV, Balboa trains, like, raw. Like, he's, like, in the yep. mountains of Russia, and he's, like, running in the snow and doing all those things, while Drago is using this really sort of advanced training techniques.
I've got the training montage in my head now.
How does it go? Hold on. There's actually two, and then that song. Are those two separate songs, or is that just the beginning?
Adrian finally shows up and is like, okay, fine, I support you now. And then it becomes Hearts on Fire.
And then it becomes Hearts on Fire. I love that. I love that movie. Like, it's so cheesy. It's so 80s. It's so good. However, in the new one, Drago's son is...
It also gave me my motto for where it comes to your sanity.
Hold on. There's no easy way out.
I must break you.
I like it. I really wanted Lil Drago to say that to Creed, actually, in the fight. But he did not. Anyways.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a rematch. Probably.
But Drago in this one is the one who's like this raw, like training in pretty remedial techniques.
Yeah.
And Michael B. Jordan's the one who's, like, really flashy training kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Anyways, Creed 2 was panned. Like, it was basically like, this is not a good movie. I'm hoping you're bringing up the scores right now to prove that I'm either totally wrong or, in fact, right. I'm probably wrong. I would guess that the critic scores are very low and that the audience score is still relatively high. But I could be wrong about this.
Well, let's see. Tomato meter, 83%. Audience score, 84%. Creed 2's adherence to a franchise formula adds up to a sequel with few true surprises, but its time-tested generational themes still pack a solid punch.
Generational. I also said today that I will watch...
Hey, it's a generational comedy.
It's a generational comedy. I also said today that I will watch any Michael B. Jordan movie.
Ah, but what I'm going to do next is I'm going to put Yakety Sax behind a montage of Adonis Creed getting his face kicked in by Drago Jr.
So, how did we even get on... Why did we get on this from Smallfoot?
Because we're watching Smallfoot.
Yeah. I was saying...
Generational.
How, like, generational movies. So, Smallfoot's not going to go down as a generational comedy.
I know this.
But, when I think of the last, like, four or five cartoons that I've seen, animated films...
By the way, this is the actual topic.
This is the actual topic. When I think of the last four or five animated movies that I've seen, I think they're some of the best four or five animated movies I've seen. And I'm wondering what you think about my, sort of my assertion that I think animated movies are getting better. So here's the last ones I've seen, just so while you stew on this question.
We got some, okay.
So the last movies I've seen that are animated films are, Smallfoot,
mm-hmm.
Coco,
mm-hmm.
Inside Out,
mm-hmm.
and Moana, and Zootopia. Those would be, like, the last major ones that I've sort of seen. So, each of those, I think, is better than what was coming out before, save a few exceptions. Save, like, Toy Story, Lion King, and maybe Emperor's New Groove, which I think is a fantastic movie.
I mean, I don't agree that they eclipse everything that came before. I think there's obviously been a lot of animated films that just functionally stand the test of time. And things
such
that,
as?
Well, I think... I'm not going to give it to Snow White and Seven Dwarfs. I think it had an important role to play in history. I think it would have been a generational film for its time.
Sure.
I think I hate watching it. It makes me unhappy and miserable.
Yeah.
I think Sleeping Beauty actually was not well-received on release compared to how well it was acquitted over the next 20 years. Like, they did some really daring stuff with the animation techniques of the time. They made it look really good.
I'm actually a pretty big fan of Cinderella. I really enjoyed it.
It's perfectly okay, but I like Sleeping Beauty. They actually did completely different things with aspect ratio.
Okay.
And with multi-plane animation techniques.
Okay.
And that made the film stupid expensive. Like, right. They lost a bundle on that. And you can see the distinctiveness of that animation style. Like, the characters are much more vertical in nature. Like, Maleficent, you can picture. Aurora is very willowy, and the lines are very long in the character designs there. The fairies are very distinctive. You know, there's a lot of work that went into that.
So I think, that to me is sort of like classic Disney.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think that you can omit, like, you're talking about cartoons. Those are
100%.
Cartoons.
I'm totally fine with that. I guess part of what I'm thinking of that is that I think there was a stretch where they were just putting out movies to put out movies.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, for me, a movie that is a throwaway is the period of time that had, like, or specifically these movies, Tangled, which I was not in any way...
See, it's generally considered the Tangled sort of like your bounce back phase.
Right.
Because Tangled was something that flowed into Frozen, for example. And Frozen actually had a lot of effort behind it. I think Tangled, it's not that it didn't have a lot of effort behind it, it's just that it wasn't using a story that had the underpinnings necessary to be truly special, I think is your ultimate problem there.
But that whole time of, like, Eldorado and Tangled...
Well, they didn't do Eldorado.
No, so we're talking about animated movies in general. So I think there was a stretch where people weren't making great animated movies.
Sure, but I'm saying, like, the stretch was during the 2000s. And I'm saying Tangled was sort of the end of the drought. Because Tangled, you're actually like, oh, okay, well, you put some effort into that. You've stripped down a lot of the kind of cheap, lazy stuff they were doing in films like Over the Hedge or Shark Tale.
Shark Tale
Chicken
was
Little.
So bad.
Why did you watch it? You just
small children. I actually saw it in theaters. I think.
Ooh, you didn't have small children then.
I did not.
Oh,
it's not a.
No.
It's not something I'm proud of, but I feel like I got like a free pass, or maybe I won a pass or something. And so I just went.
You do realize that the price was just zero because you have to give it away to let people have it.
Shark Tale was fun. And I will say this. Maybe I didn't, because I did used to sort of go to most animated movies because I generally like... I really like animation.
Sure, but...
But Shark Tale was... it's Will Smith. I kind of had this thought of like, well, Will Smith can't make a bad thing. And it turns out... he can. It's called A Shark's Tale. Is it called A Shark's Tale?
No, just Shark Tale.
Just Shark Tale.
Shark Tale.
It's bad.
It's so bad.
It's miserable. So Shark Tale. What else was in that stretch of life?
I mean, there was a ton. Like, because a lot of computer animation, you know, that came up and people were like, okay, well, that gives you an awful lot of leeway to do things. And there have always been periods of bad animation. There have always been zones of it. Like Disney...
Well, there's The Iron Giant, one of the worst animated movies of all time.
I've never seen it. I can't talk to about. But like Disney went through a stretch when they came across xerography.
Which is?
Xerography is basically facilitating hand-drawn animation by photocopying keyframes.
Oh, okay.
And making adjustments to the details. And the thing is... When I talk about that, you should be able to picture some Disney movies where you've seen a little bit of extra fuzz in the lines. It doesn't look all that clean anymore. And you're kind of like, oh,
right,
yeah, I know which ones you're talking about. The first one they did it with was 101 Dalmatians.
Mm-hmm.
You can picture
what
that looks
like. It has that sort of like, it feels like it's moving, but it doesn't look like it's, like, it has that sort of, like, as the dogs are moving, you're kind of, it's that overly, like,
yeah,
flowy, like, it just doesn't have the same kind of,
yeah, there's a lot of
the things that would, yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of graininess, there's a lot of reusing, and I mean, that went on through a lot of the era there,
yeah.
You know, once Walt was no longer involved, like yeah. Because it's cheaper. It was cheaper, and it was faster for them to do. But you'll notice that there's a big dip there. Like, I don't think a ton of people are holding up, say, Robin Hood as the best Disney film ever made.
Not at all. The thing that really gets me about that is I really like the story and the way they told it. So I do like. I do.
It's
have
still
a special
the version
place
that I think
for...
most people think of when they think Robin Hood. But
well, I have a special place in my heart for Kevin Costner. So when I think Robin Hood, that's immediately what comes into place.
I've never actually seen that film.
Don't. Like, it's not...
I'm told I'm supposed to watch it for Alan Rickman. I'm told he's a lot of fun.
Rickman is great in it.
Yeah.
And I like it in general. There's some things I like about it. But, yeah, it's not.
Yeah.
I like the soundtrack a lot. I really enjoyed it at that point. But, so... So the question is, are animated movies just straight up getting better?
Now, I understand you're posing this question. I'm saying, like, first of all, part of my contention was, of course, that there have always been sort of dark ages and down periods. That's just a thing.
Right.
You know, if we're looking at Disney, for example, they did the wartime package films. People don't even remember those for the most part.
Yeah.
I'm going to just silence that. Don't know why that's making noises. Then they sort of, I hate you, came back. They had, you know, a great period with Cinderella, Peter Pan. Mm-hmm. See, that's all in there.
Pan is definitely actually one of my favorites, except for the crazy amount of racism.
Yeah. But I mean, then you swing into, like, the Aristocats. Robin Hood. The Rescuers. When the acclaimed film, The Rescuers.
The Rescuers.
Yeah. And I mean, that really lasted through to, like, Oliver and Company.
Right.
They put the Black Cauldron in the middle of that, and the Black Cauldron was a film that nearly killed the studio.
Yeah.
It very nearly destroyed them. But then comes the bounce back, right? You do The Little Mermaid, and this is the Disney Renaissance. That's what they all call it, the Disney Renaissance. So there are periods where it gets better. Now, during this time, during the Dark Age there, where they were going through Fox and the Hound, the Black Cauldron, Great Mouse Detective, they were lost their way, they had this animator separate away from them, Don Bluth.
Yep.
It was like, you guys have lost your way. You're putting out lower quality animation. You're putting out these stories that are just not landing. Exactly.
Yeah.
So he decided he could do his own stuff. And of course, he made The Secret of Nim, which is not an accessible film, but as animated films go, it has a lot of quality.
Yeah,
it has a lot of quality. And of course, then he started making The Pebble and the Penguin, Rockadoodle, Troll in Central Park. You know, he. There goes Don Bluth. But, you know, that was him. He was doing that. And then, of course, you transition toward the computer era, and now you have DreamWorks starting out. DreamWorks shoots out of the gate with Shrek, which basically follows the Aladdin formula of let's put in a lot of pop culture references and humor to liven up the story with some celebrity voices. And it's great. And on the back of that, they start making sort of a grindhouse, almost, of that kind of film.
Yeah.
And...
I think for a while, the fact that computer animation made it, like, sort of easier for them to pump out some things, once they had some stuff sort of just worked out. Because what you can really do with computer animation is you can automate a lot of that process.
Yeah.
And so you don't have to necessarily work that hard. You have to work pretty hard and spend some money to make it look good.
Yeah.
But you can pump out a movie, like, over the hedge.
Yeah, but I mean, like, let's look at some DreamWorks stuff. Right. This is DreamWorks sort of timeline here of animated films.
Yeah.
And really, we could talk about, like, a number of different... Because DreamWorks, as a production company, is not just animation. It's also live action.
Yeah.
So, for example, the second film they ever put out was Amistad.
Which is incredible.
Yeah. The third film they put out was Mouse Hunt.
I don't think I remember that.
There's a house, some guys buy it, and there's mice living in it, and they decide to kill the mice, and it's a comedy about these inept humans.
Okay.
Increasingly escalating ways they try and blow up a house. Also, it's in camel case. It's mouse and then capital H, hunt. It's all one word.
Okay.
Yeah, that tells you about it.
Interesting. I do want to make an interesting point about Amistad.
Go for it.
Which is that one of the main stars could not speak English when the movie began.
It was Tom Brody?
What's that?
It was Tom Brody?
It was not Tom Brody. It was, and I never pronounced his name rightly, but Jimon Hushu.
Wow, you really didn't pronounce Tom Brody correctly.
Jimon Hushu, who I love, I'm actually a big fan of, could not speak English when they got him, and he's one of the slaves that's brought over for that movie. And so they basically said, well, he doesn't have to, and they sort of taught him English on the fly while he went through, and that was his first movie.
There you go.
Anyways.
So their fourth film was Polly. Do you remember Polly? It was a big Subway promotion when that came out. If your name was Paul or Polly or any variation thereof,
I don't think I remember Polly.
It's about a parrot that says up yours, and it's funny.
Nope.
Yep. Good. All right. Deep Impact. Small Soldiers. Remember Small Soldiers?
I actually really enjoyed Small Soldiers. Of course, I thought it was an interesting story.
So they came off of Talking Rude Parrot, a stupid apocalypse ripoff, and Small Soldiers. What was their next film? Saving Private Ryan. DreamWorks is a weird company.
Yeah.
And here's where we get into the animation. Their first animated film, Ants.
Which is the good one and which is the bad one?
Well, one of them has Woody Allen.
Bug's Life is the good one and Ants is the bad one.
There we go. Okay. That's the formula.
Yeah.
So that was their first animated film. And I think, you know, you should learn. And then, of course, they did that with CGI.
That's interesting to me that they made Deep Impact while another studio made Armageddon. And they made Ants while another studio made A Bug's Life.
And then their next animated feature was The Prince of Egypt.
Okay.
Now, you've seen The Prince of Egypt.
I have.
The Prince of Egypt is extraordinarily ambitious.
Yeah.
And I remember reading about it. And they did, like, tons of consultation with leaders from all three of the major Abrahamic faiths.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were trying to be very religiously sensitive to it, and the rabbis were coming on and saying, okay, well, this is what we'd like to see you do here.
Yep.
And the priests were coming and they were saying, this is what we'd like to see you do here. And the imams came in and they were like, okay, well, we really appreciate the amount of respect you're putting in here, but we can't endorse your movie. Like, why not? You're depicting a prophet. Okay, but can we do it respectfully? Can you see him? Yes. Then you're not doing it respectfully. Sorry, can't endorse that. And that's just, that's, you cannot, like, because we always hear about, like, you can't draw the prophet from Hollywood, right?
Yeah.
But any depiction, like, if you draw Jesus and you ask for their approval, they're going to be like, sorry,
no,
that's Isa, and no, he's one of our prophets. Yeah, like, no.
Interesting.
Muhammad happens to be the one that is just them, so they sort of take that as a more personal offense.
But it's still all of the prophets.
All of the prophets, you cannot depict the prophets, So they were like, that.
I really enjoyed Prince of Egypt.
It's very good. The play is a terrifying sequence.
I haven't shown it to the kids yet.
I mean, it's dark.
Yeah. I mean, my kids know, like, you know, we're a religious family, so we know the history
but
and stuff.
Sure, but I mean, like,
but it is,
you know how I saw that story first?
How?
Rugrats.
Okay.
Rugrats, the cartoon series, adapted that. Very, very different. Even if you know the story, you don't know the story. Like, when the Angel of Death comes down silently in The Prince of Egypt, it is, like, Lovecraftian how they chose to do that. It is creepy.
It's funny, actually. I don't know what age I was. What year did that come out?
1998.
Okay. So I actually wasn't super religious at that point. That was actually my introduction to what the Passover was actually about. I knew Moses. I knew the story of Moses.
Personally?
But it was a friend. But I didn't know what Passover was about, like what it was. And that was actually my introduction to that aspect. Prince of Egypt is, I really enjoy it.
Yeah. No, and I mean, like, that's what I'm saying, is that they really went ambitious with that one.
They seem really, they're a weird company.
They are. Let me tell you what came after that. Because then they decided, hey, what if we won Best Picture and American Beauty? There you go.
Okay.
And then was Galaxy Quest, which, you know, hey, let's parody Star Trek. And you know what? Entertaining film.
I've actually never seen Galaxy Quest.
You would enjoy it.
I've heard that it's really, really good, and I would 100% enjoy it.
Yeah.
Isn't it also Alan Rickman?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then we go back to the animation, because animation was the topic. The Road to El Dorado, that was them. That was them doing that one. They were like, hey, you know, we've just done the Prince of Egypt. We've shown we know how to do good and not Disney. Let's do something that will be mistaken for Disney and, like, bad Disney. Like, let's disappoint people.
Not good.
Yeah. What else could we do? Well, let's see. Then they made Gladiator. Hey, look, a Best Picture again. Yeah. That entitles us. What does that entitle us to do?
Is this their thing? They're like, let's make a great movie so we can make a bad movie?
Hey, look, Meet the Parents, The Legend of Bagger Vance.
So, Legend of Bagger Vance is probably my all-time favorite book, and so I have a certain space in my heart for the relatively bad film version of it.
Okay.
But all right, I'll give you that.
Shrek.
Okay.
Evolution.
Which is Evolution?
That's that one with Keanu Reeves? No, David Duchovny. No. And it's about, like, alien meteorite lands and starts producing all sorts of crazy life forms. They kill it with shampoo.
Okay.
Hooray, shampoo. It's very bad.
Yeah.
It's marvelously bad. A Beautiful Mind. Hey, Best Pictures. Again, let's keep doing Best Pictures.
They get a lot of Best Pictures, eh?
They do. Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron. Which is an animated film about animals where the animals don't, what's that word, talk.
Yeah, the animals have almost no role in those. Yep, there's actually a Netflix series now of it that my daughter really likes, and the horse is 100% an afterthought in that movie, or that show.
Yeah, it's tricky. What else we got here?
They didn't make Brother Bear, did they?
They did not. That was Disney, and that's what we're talking about. Because now we're into this period, so we're starting to get into, like, 2000s, and this is where Disney has problems. Right, because Disney decides to enter this era with Dinosaur.
Yeah, that wasn't.
I know one thing about Dinosaur, and it's from the aggressive tie-in promotion commercials, which were trying to, like, market this video game version.
Yeah.
And it's that apparently a character in the film goes, "Move it," and that character's name is Bruton. Yep. I know this because the commercial has this annoying kid playing the game aggressively smack talking back. "No, you move it, Bruton." And that's what I know about Dinosaur.
We have the book, because we have, like, all of the Disney, like, those books. And it's bad.
Yep.
It's not in any way good. Anyways, carry on.
So then they have Sinbad, Legend of the Seven Seas.
Not good.
We're going to move on to Shrek 2, which I enjoy.
I like it.
I enjoy it.
Yeah.
We're going to go through to... Hey, there we go. Shark Tale. Thanks for bringing Shark Tale.
That's
in
awful.
There. I appreciate it. Madagascar.
Madagascar is.
I like to trash this movie.
I think Madagascar is good by accident. Because the things that are good play relatively small roles, and then those things got to do more things as well. Like, in particular, the penguins are quite good in the first movie.
The what's?
The penguins?
Listen.
Penguins.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
The penguins are really good. And I also think the lemurs, like King Julian, is...
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Probably my favorite part of
but
that.
But that's the thing, is that the lemurs and the penguins are really good. Like, the main cast?
The main cast are so... I don't want them to be around.
Yep.
All right.
Let's see, where's our next animated... Wow, it took them a little while before they decided... They made Norbit.
That's unfortunate. Keep going.
Their production history goes... This is true. Flags of Our Fathers, Dreamgirls, Letters from Iwo Jima, Perfume, The Story of a Murderer.
Norbit.
And then, just in case you thought we had to get one off the books, Blades of Glory comes right after that.
I really enjoyed Blades of Glory.
Yes, but you're wrong on the inside.
That's true.
Yeah. Then we have... What do we have here? Wow, they really stopped doing the animated things for quite a while here.
So...
They really knocked it off for a little
to
while.
To bring this into less of a... Here is the IMDb and more of a podcast.
Nonsense. This is Wikipedia.
So, I get what you're saying in terms of there was a stretch here where there wasn't good stuff. Now, DreamWorks also then made Kung Fu Panda, which I actually really enjoyed.
It did. I'm not seeing the
and
list
the sequels,
here.
Which were not really fantastic. But my question remains. When the last bunch of movies include, say, Frozen, Moana, Inside Out, Up,
Yeah, I'm going to get you. I'm going to get you.
Okay.
Here we go. So this is the chain I was looking for.
Okay.
So that was the whole list. This is where it spins off Disney DreamWorks Animation. So then we have Flushed Away.
Not good.
Good. Shrek the Third.
Not good.
Over the Hedge.
Not good.
B-Movie.
Really not good.
Madagascar, Escape to Africa. B-Movie
might be the movie that even kids were like...
Kids didn't like that.
What are you trying to do?
Yeah, that was not entertaining.
It's so boring.
We got Monsters vs. Aliens.
I actually enjoyed that one.
Shrek Forever After.
Nope.
Megamind.
I enjoyed that one. But okay. kids did not enjoy that one.
That's right. Puss in Boots.
Nope.
No. Madagascar 3.
Nah,
I didn't Rise of the Guardians.
No.
No. The Croods.
The Croods, I think, was very funny.
I enjoyed parts of it. I don't know that our kids would enjoy it as much as I did.
My kids did not love it as much as I did.
Turbo.
Turbo is a really weird... Turbo's like the art house film of those, where you're like, what are we doing here?
Well, here's
like,
the one where they reference something that your kids have never heard of, Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
My kids actually like Peabody and Sherman.
Were they familiar with them before the film?
No.
That would be my point.
Yeah.
Penguins of Madagascar, otherwise known as When They Gave Up.
Better than Madagascar 3.
Home.
Home was great.
Trolls.
Trolls was very good. Trolls was very good.
Well, next word I use is going to really get you then. The Boss Baby.
I hate The Boss Baby so much. Hilariously, it's a book by a pretty good children's author.
Is it though?
Yeah.
I feel like it's a book by a formerly pretty good children's author. I feel like write that book, it comes out.
And then it's all over.
Yeah, your stock just goes...
That movie is just like, do you want terrible children? If yes, click here, watch film.
Yeah.
It's very bad. But, and it doesn't even make any sense. Boss Baby is one of my favorite of the pitch meetings. Because when they do the Boss Baby pitch meeting, you're just like... We all thought this movie was bad, but the things you're pointing out are the bad things we didn't even consider about this movie. Okay.
But, and here's the thing, is that they were running Shrek into the ground. So Shrek the Third came out 2007.
Yeah.
Shrek 2 is a pretty entertaining movie. Jennifer Saunders elevates it. Rupert Everett's a lot of fun. Shrek the Third is bad.
Yeah.
That was 2007. 2008 is when they launch a franchise that is...
I'm going to guess...
Go for it.
How to Train Your Dragon?
Nope, this one's Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, okay.
So Kung Fu Panda. And Kung Fu Panda 1 and 2 are great.
Yes.
Kung Fu Panda 3 is a pile of crap.
It's very bad. I was really disappointed because 1 and 2 are so good.
And it would have been... It feels like it wouldn't have needed to be that much effort to continue on that trajectory.
No.
And they just went the wrong way. Now, 2010.
Okay.
So this is before Kung Fu Panda 2.
Yeah.
This is when they release How to Train Your Dragon.
Which I love.
How to Train Your Dragon is extraordinary.
Yeah.
How to Train Your Dragon 2 is also excellent.
I still really enjoyed it.
You know what we should do then? Toward the end of this month, we should go check out the third one.
The new one?
Because it's coming out February 22nd, and by all accounts, it's going to be good.
I'm so excited for it.
Yeah. So, honestly.
And actually, they then brought out a bunch of television shows based on How to Train Your Dragon, and they were all really good. Like, there's an episode of that that's actually better than...
They've actually told me that, like, the show is...
The show is so good. There's an episode where they take these dinosaur eggs, and they put them in everyone's houses as, like, a gift.
Mm-hmm.
And what they don't realize is when the dinosaur eggs hatch, they explode and kind of light on fire. So when they figure out the first one does that, they're all of a sudden like... And then they basically burn down the village because they all explode in everyone's houses.
Fantastic.
As like a Christmas present or like at birth. It's really good. And it was so well done. Like, the things they do in How to Train Your Dragon, even one, the story of Hiccup and his dad and all these kind of things, they're just so good. Where's Brave fall in there?
Brave.
Is that DreamWorks?
Brave was Pixar. Disney Pixar.
Was Pixar, okay.
Yeah. And it's not fantastic. I mean, it's okay. It's not fantastic.
I like it conceptually, I think.
But here's the thing.
The second half of the movie kind of sucks.
Your pitch is that the movies, animated movies as a whole, have gotten much better. Now,
I
think that the thing is, John Lasseter, and I mean, he's on leave because he might, problems with the space variety. But, you know, he came back and he was from Pixar and he brought the Pixar sensibility back into Disney. And between the two of them, there was a lot of, like, you know, interchange there, which created Zootopia, created Inside Out, created Moana. And I think that, and Coco.
Yep.
And I think that a lot of this comes from deliberately trying to create movies that have a certain message and theme, mm-hmm. and work hard to drive that home in a way that is high quality and engaging. So, like, there has been a notable amount of effort in that vein,
yeah.
in that company. And when you see that flag a bit, because it does,
yeah.
you get, like, The Last Dinosaur. You get
sure
Ralph Breaks the Internet.
Yep.
Yeah. So,
which is really a shame because Wreck-It Ralph was...
I enjoyed Wreck-It Ralph.
Quite good.
But here is sort of the spate of things that came out in 2018 in the animation. Just so you know, that my position is that, no, animation as a whole has not gotten better. You're just focusing on some particular
winning highlights. On some of the good ones.
Exactly.
Okay, what are the lowlights then?
The Grinch.
The newest one?
Yes.
I really enjoyed it.
Hotel Transylvania 3.
Is that the one with the grandfather?
No, that was 2.
Okay, because I enjoyed 2.
Yeah, I don't think I saw 3.
Oh, no, that's not going to be good. Did you?
Never Sherlock mind. Gnomes.
I was so disappointed with Sherlock Gnomes.
Early Man.
Because, hold on.
Okay.
Because Romeo and Juliet was really good. It was actually really good. And Sherlock Gnomes just said, nope, we're just going to take... the characters you liked, we're going to bring them back. We're then going to bring back characters that children would not understand at all. We're going to make it super dark in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And it's fundamentally not going to make any sense. And go.
Early Man.
What's Early Man?
Well, Early Man would be, you know, like caveman type thing.
Right.
Peter Rabbit.
Okay.
Duck Duck Goose.
Okay.
Sergeant Stubby.
I'm sorry, what?
Sergeant Stubby, an American Hero.
Nope.
And we've got Charming.
Nope.
Next Gen.
My son started watching that. It looked interesting.
The Stolen Princess.
I don't think so.
Luis and his friends from outer space.
These are all real things? You're not just putting together random words? Is this correct?
If I was putting together random words, they'd be a lot more fun than that. White Fang.
Well, I like the original.
Madagascar story. 4.
Oh, apparently. Please don't.
Yeah.
Please stop.
Doesn't look like it actually came out, but I mean, it certainly could have. let's see. Henchmen.
Okay, so there's going to be bad movies, too.
Sure.
But so here, I guess, would be... Let me slightly...
Elliot, the Littlest Reindeer.
Let me... okay. Let me slightly change my thesis statement.
I figured you'd have to.
The best animated movies coming out are fundamentally better than the best animated movies of the last 20 to 30 years. Well, there's see, my 20 refined...
To 20 to 30 would...
So let's go all the way back...
30 is 1988, so
30 I picks you all the way back to 1990. Well, roughly, you know.
No. It's 1989. We're 2019. Hi.
All right. It's the basic era. So sure.
So I would say you're wrong.
So what are the five movies?
Five.
Yeah.
Okay.
Five movies mm-hmm. between say 1988
mm-hmm.
or actually
89.
Early 1989.
Yep.
And I'll give you as far as 2001. What are the five movies there that are fundamentally better than Up, Moana, Inside Out, Coco, and Frozen.
And Frozen.
Now, you don't like Frozen, but...
I like Frozen.
Okay.
It's okay.
So, five movies that are better than those five. And those five come from the last, what, 5 years? Up's a little bit longer. Up is about...
Up is 2010.
Up is 2010. So, that's a bit more of a stretch.
That's 9 years, yeah.
But... yeah, I'm giving you I'm giving you a 13-year stretch.
But I mean, you already know what I'm going to say, and you don't agree with me on this.
Well, what are the five? What are the five?
Is there a point to this exercise? Because you don't agree.
Sure. No, I think there is. I don't know what all five. I think I have three in mind that you're going to say. All
right, let's have. What do you have?
Well, I think three. You're gonna say Lion King.
I'm going to say Lion King.
You're going to say Toy Story.
No. For those of you who can't see, he made a face.
I'm a little flabbergasted. He made a surprise that you wouldn't face. Choose that.
I don't like Toy Story. I've never liked Toy Story.
I think you're going to choose Beauty and the Beast.
I'm going to choose Beauty and the Beast. It's got a Best Picture nomination. I feel really secure in that one.
I think you're going to choose The Emperor's New Groove.
I'm not.
So I've only got two that you're going to... you're not going to pick Aladdin, are you?
Yeah.
Okay. I'd actually... Aladdin's good. I'll give you that. I'm interested to what the other two would be, because I can't think of two... Maybe there's just one that I'm, like, glaringly forgetting, but I just can't think of it, so...
Little Mermaid.
I've never really enjoyed Little Mermaid.
Have you seen it?
I don't think so.
There we go.
Classic Laird. Tom Brody for the win.
I think Little Mermaid was quite a big thing in storytelling when it came out. I think it's still... Because one of my things is this, and I think, you know, like Lion King, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, and I could have picked, for example, Shrek. 2001 is within the parameters there. I could have said Shrek. You know, it sort of goes against your grain because you wanted to put, like, hand-drawn animation up against, like, you were looking for those ones, kind of.
No, not necessarily.
Go ahead.
I have no problem with hand-drawn animation. I have no problem with hand-drawn animation. I think that you could hand-draw Moana, and hand draw all those things, and it would be fine. We just don't happen to be at this point.
Yeah. But I also could have tapped, for example, Mulan. I think Mulan is a really extraordinary.
I'd give you that. I really
enjoy Mulan.
Interesting thing about that, though, not overly liked by kids.
It depends on the kids. I mean, I really liked it. My sister really liked it.
Like, How old were you when it was?
I would have been, so 1998, I would have been 10. My sister would have been 8.
Yeah, see, I think of a little bit younger than that as a kid. Like, I think 5 to 10. So I guess you're in that older range.
Yeah. Well, I think exactly that age.
Younger than that age, but also exactly the words you said. No, I think, that's fair.
I think as well, you know, I would love to say Hunchback. I can't say Hunchback because the gargoyles. That's pretty much the only reason. Because otherwise,
it's a great movie. I still just don't know that I think those five. I think some of those five for sure. Like
I mean, here's my thing.
Very clearly put Lion King.
Like my challenge is this: having seen Moana, would I rewatch Moana? Other than with kids. Like, would I rewatch it on my own? My answer? I know you would. Absolutely. It's your favorite animated movie. Last I checked. It might have changed, but that's the last time we talked.
It probably still is. If it's not my favorite, it's number two.
Come on. I think that's a bit harsh. That's a little bit all or nothing, Mike. it's obviously your favorite. The narrative is kind of thin, except to the end. Like, it is a sort of a hoppy adventure kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it's a segment in a way that it doesn't really engage me a lot. I enjoy parts of it, and I would go rewatch those parts of it, but if I was asked to sit down and rewatch the whole film, I'd be like, I could do something.
See, there's a few on yours that I don't think I would rewatch.
And that's fair, but at the same time, I'm like Frozen, I've now seen enough times that I'm like, wouldn't do that again. I know for a fact, I have rewatched Zootopia. I have rewatched Inside Out.
I think Zootopia might actually have the most rewatchability of those five. And I don't think it's the best movie of the five. But I think it's one of the most rewatchable ones.
Yes, actually, I will give you that. I would probably watch Zootopia again. It's got a great narrative. It's got characters I enjoy. Inside Out is a film that I've seen 3 times in theaters. Like, I paid the price to go see it. Not the price of the ticket. That's... Because you might be thinking, that's the price.
No.
The price is having to sit through that fucking volcano song.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Here's the thing about... I think Inside Out was... I think it changes the whole conversation about what animated movies could and should be.
I mean, I think
in a similar way that I think Up did a little bit as well. But
I think it was extraordinary. But I think if you're talking about something that is generational, hey, there's a word. And I think if you're talking about something that really makes the medium sing, I think that my picks stand. I think they work.
I think one of the other things that makes it difficult to even argue about it, not me saying you're wrong or I'm right,
but
one of the things that I think makes it difficult to argue about it is the age that you see them at and what impact they could have based on that age. Like,
yeah, and that's true. And I mean,
I think there's a lot of me, for example, that thinks if I saw, like, because I've seen a lot of these movies now. Like, I've seen Moana when I'm 37 or 6, and I've seen, you know, these kind of ones. I don't know that Aladdin, for example, I'm not saying it wouldn't, but I don't know that Aladdin, if I saw it for the first time when I was 36 or 37, would have had the same appeal to me as it does.
Yeah.
I do think The Lion King would have.
Yeah.
And I think The Lion King is fundamentally...
Again, like, you know, I must have told you this, about the trailer to The Lion King.
Yes.
Yeah. So for the audience who doesn't know this, the original trailer to The Lion King, text comes on the screen, black screen, text comes on and says, Disney is releasing its next feature film this coming summer. Here is the entire opening song from that movie. That's the trailer. And then they just do Circle of Life straight through.
Yeah.
And they were like, yep, we can sell it on that. And they were right. They were right. It is mind blowing. I'm so terrified
for what they're going to do with the new one.
It'll just be bad. That's okay. you can't win that one. Here's the thing, though. I think you're right that it'll be very hard to say, like, can I recontextualize having seen Aladdin in the context of now being in my 30s?
Yeah.
And the answer, I think, to that is kind of a harder no. So what I try to do instead is to say, like, what is my level of engagement with up from the mentality of where I was as a kid? And I think that's something I'm more capable of doing in that sense. And my mentality there is, like, I wouldn't have been engaged by the first 10 minutes. There are parts of it that...
Oh, I for sure wouldn't have been, no.
No. There are parts of it along the way that I would have found a little bit slow, and then there are parts that I would have been like, oh, yeah, that's a really funny part, because it's got the talking dog, or it's got the bird, Kevin. By the way, Kevin's hilarious.
Literally
everything about Kevin.
Literally, I think, for a kid, as soon as Russell shows up, that's a good movie.
I think it's an okay movie. I think as an adult looking at that film, the best part of that film is the first 10 minutes. It's because, like, if that had been just a standalone Disney short.
Yeah.
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 It is a towering achievement. And the part that really catches people emotionally.
Oh,
that is exactly
what I saw. We were going to Moncton for a funeral of my wife's cousin's husband, who passed away way too young. You know, they were just had a baby, and he passed away. So I decided, well, we need something to take our mind off things. Why don't I just download a couple of movies onto my laptop and we'll watch something? Oh, there's a new animated movie out. I guess we'll watch that. And then I proceeded to watch Up.
Did it uplift people's moods?
It did not. It was devastating. It just opens. I mean, it opens perfectly.
Oh, yeah.
Perfectly.
Yeah.
When they both go to that house in the very beginning, you're like, this is insane. This is so, so good. So I don't know. I mean, maybe they're not getting better, but I do like sort of what you said about the idea of, like, attention is being paid to the stories we are telling and how we're telling them in a way that when you look at the throwaway era of, you know, Fox and the Hound even and all these kind of movies where you're like, well, we have a story. I guess we'll make it into an animated movie and go.
Yeah.
Where it just wasn't being told the same way.
Attention being paid. And I think that's a characteristic of every sort of good versus bad era. Like, when you're looking at the Disney Renaissance, you're seeing these guys know their company is on the verge of termination here because things have been so weak. And then what are you doing? You're bringing in acclaimed Broadway songwriters. And you're saying, you guys are running the show now. You know, you're bringing in some excellent character designers. You're bringing in some voices and you're saying, okay, we're going to do, like, just let you guys run wild and see if it works. Do you know, like, for example, I guess I won't go there. You haven't seen the film, so I'll save that a little
bit. What movie?
Be for Little Mermaid.
Okay.
So we'll talk about it after the fact.
Yeah.
But, I just think that you clearly see sort of attention and investment, and it really caps out at, and the funny thing is it actually caps out at a point where the attention and the investment screws up, which is Pocahontas, which is, right. You know, their big idea of let's make this big prestige picture and let's work heavily on this and see if it comes through. Not. And it's just, yeah, no.
Yeah.
It's everything about the Disney Renaissance era, say, but you look at it and you just say, well, this is what happens if the people involved care about making a great movie and forget about making a good one.
Right. Yeah, that's 100% true. Interesting question, and then we've got to wrap this up soon, obviously, yeah. But did you see The Lion King 1.5?
No.
So, usually, I think those kind of spin-off movies tend to fail pretty miserably. And I think they tend to be pretty bad. I mean, we've talked tonight about Kronk's New Groove and those sort of spin-off movies. I really liked what they did with Lion King 1.5, which was tell the same story, but in the gaps. It was a really interesting concept of, like, we're around the same times, and, like, as those characters leave, these just kind of come into the same space. It was a really interesting way to do that kind of movie. Like, instead of it being a... because it's sort of Timon and Pumbaa's movie. Mm-hmm. They break the fourth wall almost immediately with this, the same way they kind of do in Emperor's New Groove.
Yeah.
But the
big dollies away from Pride Rock.
Yeah. Yeah. You would sort of expect, like, oh, this is the spin-off movie. This is the sidekick movie. This is their story.
Yeah.
And it is, but they do such a good job of weaving it in with the actual Lion King movie that it actually makes sense.
It's sort of the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is funny because, I mean, technically those two are Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. That's
literally who they are. Okay. So, to sum up, you would contend... Well, let's sum this up a little bit.
I think your revised thesis was that... animated films currently, the best animated films currently are better than the best, animated, than the best films, animated films 30 years ago. And my contention is no. My contention is that periodically we get to the point again where the people involved in doing this really care about elevating at least some aspects of the medium. And each time that happens, you get some real highlights, you get some generation films that stand out,
right.
You get some things that just hit the zeitgeist and are marvelous. And we're in that period again.
So we happen to be in the heyday.
We happen to be in the heyday of that.
And it's gonna... You think we're in the dot-com bubble of...
Well, I wouldn't call it a bubble. I would say, like I said, it's periodic. You know, I think there will come another point down... Like, if you look at Disney's upcoming film list, for example, it's bad. Like, Ralph Breaks the Internet was one of the first of the sequels that are going to be official Disney can't. Like, Frozen 2 is coming down the pike. Will Frozen 2? It might.
I don't think Frozen 2 is going to be bad.
You know, it might not be. I'm just saying that, you know, if you look beyond that, the list is not... There's no list. There is no list right now.
Yeah.
They canceled the other film they were going to do. They're going to do Jack and the Beanstalk. Gigantic, it was going to be called.
So, here's my next question. Uh-huh. Is the new Lion King movie going to be any good?
Nope.
Okay. Does making that movie take away anything from the original?
No.
You don't think it's going to hurt the...
The only one of those live-action ones that has actually detracted in any way from the original is Maleficent.
Right.
Because it takes the venom out of Disney's best villain.
Right.
And it didn't have to.
Yeah?
Yeah. It does so in a way that is... comically insulting.
I didn't like Maleficent, but I liked
that you got to rag on it later. Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Some of the concept. Okay, so if you were telling the people here three animated movies of all time that they must watch, what would those three animated movies be?
Well, I would say you should probably go see Akira, because because that's some really fine.
I've asked you this. We've actually had an episode that was just about animated movies, although we talked about it in a slightly different lens.
That's true.
And you did the same thing then.
I'm a huge, giant jerk.
You're the worst.
Yes. Animated films I want you to see. I mean, if you haven't seen The Lion King, please, please see The Lion King. Obviously. See the first 5 minutes of The Lion King. I don't care what happens next. See the first 5 minutes of The Lion King. It is tremendous. I think you could do worse than seeing yourself in Mulan. I like Mulan. It's not world-changing like The Lion King is. That opening of The Lion King is just stupendous. But it's good. It is a good, solid film. And I would say you could do pretty well to watch either Aladdin or Shrek. You know what? No, I'm going to jump forward. I'm going to jump forward. I'm going to bring another one out. And I'm going to say I would like you to see... I'd like to see either Kung Fu Panda 2 or How to Train Your Dragon, the first one.
Ooh. All right. So if I'm telling you three that you have to see, Lion King is obviously on that list. Number two on that list for me is probably Inside Out. And number three would be Moana. Those would be the three animated movies I think everyone on the planet should see. What's one popular animated movie that you don't think people should see? That you're like, look, I know that has an okay reputation, but don't see that movie.
We didn't even mention Ice Age. Don't see Ice Age. Okay. Any Ice Age.
Ice Age is yours.
God, don't see Ice Age.
Mine...
I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, a popular animated movie I don't think people should see. I mean, that whole franchise keeps going somehow.
So yeah.
I mean, what is yours? Like, you have something in mind, obviously.
No, I really didn't. I was hoping you would. You know what? It would be Fantasia 2000.
Why?
Because
it wasn't really popular, so I don't think that
Well, it was... Yeah, that's true, I guess. I was so disappointed with Fantasia 2000.
Why? What was disappointing about Fantasia 2000?
The original Fantasia has maybe one of my favorite all-time animated pieces.
Sure.
I'm assuming you know which one I'm talking about.
I don't.
It's The Magician's Apprentice.
Oh, Sorcerer's Apprentice, yeah.
Sorcerer's Apprentice. That to me is like, that's amazing. Like, that's such a good, good piece. And I was so bored by Fantasia 2000. There's whales jumping, and I'm like,
Pines of Rome is dull, but I mean... You're telling me that you were not at all taken by Rhapsody in Blue, that whole segment there?
No.
Really?
No.
Okay.
I found it fundamentally, I was bored out of my tree watching Fantasia 2000.
Every segment?
Yeah.
One of those segments is The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
But it's, right, I mean, that's from the original.
What about the Steadfast Tin Soldier? Dull?
Oh, I didn't like that at all.
Yeah.
I think part of it was the animation.
Because the animation is like that's that sort of weird 2000 era where like there's a lot of computer aiding the hand drawn and it's got this weird sheen and this weird texture.
100% Iron Giant. I didn't like Iron Giant. I think it's dumb. It's a beloved film for people, and
I've never seen it. So
I thought it was dumb. So. That's it. Thanks for tuning in. You should watch Smallfoot. It's very funny. And
see your doctor if you have big feet.